So today's stand-up, we are going to talk about TDD. Okay, we're not going to have some topical topic. We're going to go after the big stuff, okay? TDD, is it good? Is it bad? Do you use it? TJ's just smiling, looking like an absolute champ in that freeze frame. Dude, somehow TJ's the only human I know that gets freeze framed, and it's a good picture.
Yep.
Yeah, look at TJ. Look at that
Labrador. I can't handle this right now. I cannot handle this right now.
All right, Casey, you probably have the strongest opinion, potentially, out of all of us.
Okay. I doubt that, but okay.
All right, because I also have a strong opinion, but I'm willing
probably
to...
you then.
Yeah, I all think right, Prime, you got to lead off the strong opinions here.
I'll lead off with the strong one, which is, so I recently just tried another round of TDD. Okay?
Prime, you have to say, hey everyone, welcome to the stand-up. We got a great show for you tonight. I'm your host, Suprimogen. With me, as always, are TJ, hello, Trash, hey everyone, C. Muratori. Great to be here, Prime, thanks. Today's topic is tested. Have you ever heard a podcast before?
Thanks, everybody, for joining. You're watching the hottest podcast on the greatest software engineering topics, The Stand-Up. Today, we have with us Teej, who's in the basement fixing something.
Is that a Home Depot ad?
Look, he's showing us his router. We have with us Trash Dev, broke a toe winning a judo competition, still living off that high. And C. Muratori, the actual good programmer among us.
Oh, all right. I got a lot to live up to.
Yeah, don't worry. It's not hard to live up to, at least in this crowd. I'll kind of start us off on this one. So we've been developing a game called The Towers of Mordoria. We came up with the name from an AI, and AI generated that name for us. And effectively, I decided at one point, I have this kind of really black box experience. I have a deck of cards that I need to be able to draw cards out. When they're played, they either need to go to the discard pile or the exhaust pile. When there's no more cards in my hand or not enough to be able to draw cards, I need to be able to take all the discard cards. Dude, Teej is just flexing on us touching grass right now. Mm-hmm. Put all the discard cards, shuffle everything up, and then draw new cards back out, replenish the draw pile, right? This sounds like a TDD pinnacle problem. There's black boxes. There's a few operations. I'm going to be able to do this. And so I just did this like a week and a half ago on stream. It was amazing. I did the whole thing, designed the entire API in the test, then set up all the tests, set up it all to fail. Then it did work, or then it failed. Then I made it work. Then it worked, and it was great, and everything was perfect. And I was like, there we go. We just did it. I just TDD'd, and it was a good experience. So then I took what I made, and I went to integrate it into the game and realized I made an interface that's super good for testing and not actually good for the actual thing I was making, and I had to redo it. And so it always, you know, that's kind of been – a lot of my experience with TDD is that either the thing is simple enough and is super black box enough that I can make it and both the testing interface and the usage interface is the same, or I create an interface that's really great for testing and it's actually not that great for the practical use case. And I know people talk about how it's a great way to develop your architecture and all this kind of stuff. I've just yet to really buy it, but I will say the thing that I do like doing is on problems that are hard to develop and have many moving constraints, I do like to co-create tests with it, meaning that I come up with an idea, how do I want to use it, I program it out, then I go create a test, which is backwards from TDD, go, okay, this is what I want to see. Am I even correct on this? Can I get a fast iteration loop being like, no, 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 yes, okay, got it. Next thing, I want to make sure it does this. No, 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 yes, okay, got it. And so I do like the fast iteration cycle of getting tests in early, but few problems feel like I can actually have that. And I feel like this, all things need to be tested immediately and need to be written first. You just write dumb interfaces. Everything becomes inversion of control. Everything's an interface. And you just have this abstract mess at the end of it because testing was the requirement, not, hey, use it when it's good. So that's my TDD experience. And I feel fairly strong about that. And if you say TDD is good, I feel like I'm going to jump kick you.
I can respond to that, or Casey, if you have strong feelings.
No, I think Trash. Let's go to Trash Take first.
Yeah, no cool. Blockers
so
on
first,
my end.
First, you couldn't like deter me from doing any task, then to tell me I need to like start off by writing tests. First off, Second, I kind of had a very similar experience recently building like
Hold on, can you rewind for a second? What did you just say for your first point?
I said you couldn't deter me from doing work if you let off with me having to write tests first.
I don't even know what that means.
You mean you couldn't deter me anymore? Like, that's the most deterring thing, or...
Oh, man, am I stupid?
You are. Can you try using a different word to describe what you feel?
We're confused.
Okay, let's reword this. Flip, please take this out.
Flip, leave it in.
I don't like test-driven development. However...
Okay, got it.
However, I just built something recently at work, which was very kind of similar to what Prime was saying. I ended up doing a little bit of test-driven development, but... You wouldn't notice this, but I'm actually really kind of passionate about testing. So I'm going to kind of like, when I test, I would say 2% of the time I actually lead off with test-driven development. And the rest is usually post-implementation because one, requirements and all these things change afterwards, right? So it's like, why write tests for things that are potentially going to change and you don't really know what's going to happen? But I do write tests for very granular things that I think are going to be used all the time. So for instance, like if I wrote a parser for like my CLI, the parser is going to be reused by multiple commands, probably never going to change. So I typically will write that. And I'll also write tests for things that take multiple steps to test. So like, you know, people will argue for end-to-end tests because you test just like a user. So that's kind of how I like to develop. I like to use it like I would use it for anybody else. But if I got to do like three steps to get to the point I want to test, I'm like, all right, screw this. I'm just going to write a test specifically for this like instance, and then I save time that way. So that's usually the time I arrive at test-driven development is specifically in those scenarios. Otherwise, it's purely just like, you know, integration testing and stuff like that, because you end up with stuff like Prime said, like when you write tests, you write everything so granular and everything works so modular that you just don't even know what it's like when you actually put them together. So that's why that's kind of like the way I approach things. That being said, like people that kind of like live and die by test-driven development, I don't get it. But I was hoping someone would be pro TDD in this group so I could argue with them. That's all I got for right now.
I'm pretty much right there with Trash on this one. My feeling on TDD is pretty much the same as my feeling on OOP, right? The problem is not if you end up with an object or something that looks like an object in your code in OOP, that's fine. The problem is the object-oriented part. The, like, thinking in terms of that wastes a lot of your time and leads you to bad architecture, I think. TDD is the same way. I think testing is very good, but test-driven development, meaning forcing the programmer to think in terms of tests during development, like, that is what your primary thing is I'm making tests, to drive the development, the TD part, that's actually the problem. I think the reason for that's pretty straightforward. And it's kind of weird because usually the people who advocate for TDD are the same people who would poo-poo any similar suggestion, like any suggestion that like, oh, we should measure performance during development. They'll be like, that's ridiculous. You're wasting so much program time. We're like, what about the 8,000 tests that no one ever needed because we ended up deleting that system anyway? And they're like, well, you know, test-driven development is very good. So I think like the problem with all of those sorts of things, any of them, is just putting emphasis on something instead of talking about it like what it really is, which is a trade-off. If you're spending time making tests or you're orienting things towards making tests, that is necessarily programming time that isn't being spent doing something else. Like programming is zero sum. If you spend time doing one thing, you're not spending time doing another thing. And so, for example, if you end up spending a lot of your time making the interface revolve around tests, you weren't spending a lot of your time making the interface revolve around actual use cases, because actual use cases don't usually look like tests. Therefore, sometimes you get the exact situation that Prime was talking about, where you do test-driven development and you end up with a completely unusable mess, which is actually very common in my experience, right?
I wouldn't call it a mess. You know, I write pretty good. I mean, it was like pretty decent. I just want to
say. No, the API. The API is a mess. Not the code, right? Like, the code has been tested. It probably works. But the API is a mess, right? I mean, that's what happens. Because it wasn't designed specifically for the kinds of use cases it was meant to tackle. And so you end up with that problem. And again, it was shifting the developer's focus was all it took to make that happen. Good APIs are hard to make in the first place, right? So if you're adding more complexity to the programmer's workflow when they're trying to make an API that's good for the you know, the actual use case, you're just going to get a worse result. Again, zero sum. So what I would say is, like, testing is better something that you do as the thing takes shape. When you're like, okay, we now have figured out, like, how this system works properly. We're really happy with it. The API is working nicely. We check the performance and we think we've got, like, reasonable, we've got a reasonable path towards having this perform really well. Now let's start seeing what is the overlay, like, what are the parts we can now start to add some little substrate to test that we think are going to have bugs that will be hard to find. Because that's usually the way I look at it. Like, what are the parts of this system whose bugs will be either very hard to find or really catastrophic? Like, they'll cost us a lot of money or they'll crash the user's computer or whatever, right? And then you put the tests for that, right? And that's how I've always approached it. And I think that works pretty well. And you do want to do that step. But I don't think you want test-driven development. It just seems like a really bad idea. And to be honest, when I use software that comes from people who are like TDD, this organization, CD, whatever, it's full of bugs all the time. Right? Like, I'm not getting these pristine software things. I mean, I would imagine that the people at YouTube do a lot of testing and code reviews. And yet for the past 8 years, the play button cannot properly represent whether something is playing or not. For 8 years, right? Sometimes it's paused and it has the play thing, and sometimes it's playing and it has the play thing. And sometimes, both of those times, it shows the pause thing. It's just, it doesn't seem like the testing is working, guys. So again, I'd say, you know, I think you have to kind of rethink how you're allocating that time. That's what I would say.
Can we get TJ in here? Can Playboy TJ get in on this one?
Can we? Am I coming in loud and clear?
Yeah, your voice sounds actually good. Your voice sounds good.
Because I went
you're
outside,
looking
like
good.
Trash
the grass
said.
Looks good.
Thank you. So I would say, I think I agree mostly with what everybody is saying, although I would say for a few kinds of problems, the problem is I think people, when you say TDD, they just mean 10,000 different things. So this is like one of the problems, right? There's like people who are like, TDD is only if you do red, green cycle before you write the code, you have to write the tests, and like, you can't write any code until you've written a failing test and blah, 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 which like I get, that maybe they're the people who invented the word, so they can define it that way. But like, I find that not very useful for some stuff. But there are like testing or like projects where I think I test like basically everything, and there's just ways that you can do it that are like more effective versus less effective. Like, my favorite kind of testing is if you can find a way to do like snapshot or like golden testing, whatever, you know, people have different names for it. But where you can basically just write a test and then say, assert that the output is the same as it used to be, right? Usually I've seen those called snapshot tests or expect tests. I find that those are like super
testing often.
Yeah, yeah. Or in like, people will use them in regression. But like, the kinds that I've done it before, like, maybe I'm building up a complex data structure to like represent the state of like a bunch of users, or maybe it's the parse tree of something, or maybe it's the type system, whatever it is. If you can find a way to represent that in like a human readable way, usually just by like printing it in tests that I've done, you can just like compare the diff between this one and before you made the changes. And they should be fast, at least. If they're not fast, then that's a separate problem. Like, your tests have to be fast for people to run them. Otherwise, they don't run them. Then those kinds of things tend to be, I find, like, very effective and give you a lot of confidence that you haven't, like, scuffed anything throughout the system with your changes, right? Because you're sort of, like, asserting the entire state of something. And if something changes, it's really easy to update because you just say, oh, snapshot, update this. Cool. Done. 1 second, all your tests are updated. You walk through them and change them. You get some other side benefits, too, like in code review. You literally see the diff of the snapshot. And you can be like, that looks wrong. That used to say false and now it says true. Those things that shouldn't have been flipped between those. So there are like certain problems where I've employed like nearly TDD in the snapshot style, in the sense that the snapshot always fails on the first time you run it because there's nothing to expect. And then you accept that snapshot if it looks good, or keep changing the code until it does look good. And then you like move on to the next thing. So, but it's kind of like a unique case. Like, I wouldn't want to snapshot test a, like, HTML page, right? It would just, like, there's no way that they're reproducible, it feels like, anyways. But, like, so there's it's only for, like, certain subsets of problems, which have been more effective, like, for me, because I've made a lot of dev tools in my career and stuff like that. So you want to do, like, verify that all of the references of something look like XYZ. Okay, very easy to do with snapshots. That's kind of the main, the one thing that I wanted to throw out there is like that style of testing I find really powerful. And I've used it a lot, like across projects you wouldn't really expect as well.
I've always had the opposite experience with snapshot tests. I feel like it's okay maybe if like it's you and maybe some other people that actually know the expected output of a snapshot. My experience is it changes and they're like, oh, I don't know, let's just update it. And then the test passes again. And then you're kind of just left with the snapshot. And you're just like, all right. So it's to the point like where it's like, all right, let's just get rid of them because they're just changing every time requirements change and no one actually knows what the expected output is. And one more point I want to make. Someone said something about like test help refactoring. I think that's true after a product is actually mature because you're just going to be, it's kind of like a snapshot test where you're just going to keep updating your tests every time something changes to the point where it's kind of pointless. So I always find when tests are like that, I usually just delete them immediately. Okay, go ahead, Trash.
All right.
I called you Trash. Oh my
God. Yeah, no, you called me Trash.
Your comment filled Prime with so much joy, it translated into physical up and down motion.
Yeah.
Like, I was literally watching like, him as I was talking, yes. And I was like, let's just see how hype we can get Prime.
Yeah, dude, I wish I could see you guys.
I see nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, we see you. We see you guys. Yeah, we can see you, TJ, enjoying
TJ,
grass.
If you see a strange mushroom in the grass, do not eat it.
Oh, yeah, don't eat it.
Do not
eat
the strange mushroom, TJ. When you're mowing, and there's a strange mushroom.
Guys, do I don't have my AI game. Glasses. Do I eat this or not? Do I eat it or not, guys?
Don't eat the mushroom.
Eat the mushroom. That's all I heard. Okay, I'm going for it. Prime, say your thing.
Go. All right. So the reason why I actually agree with Trash a lot on this one is that I've done a lot of snapshot testing, and I think there's probably does exist a world where this makes a lot of sense. It's just all the times I've ever done it, whenever a requirement change or I have to make a change that warrants changing the snapshot, I've also had to make some non-minor change also to some logic throughout the program. So when my snapshot breaks, I also don't know if I got it right. So now I'm like trying to hand eyeball through this thing, like one at a line, like, okay, is this really what I meant it for it to be in this moment? How do I know I should change this from true to false? Like I have to re-reason about everything. And I find that true snapshot testing on big things is feels very difficult, though I love it. Like I want, like ultimately that's what I always want. I fall into the, hey, let's just make a golden trap constantly. Like that is like my default go-to. It's just like, it's golden time. And then I always get sad. As far as like the whole unit test breaking and mature product thing, I just find that testing generally, I do not think testing helps for refactoring unless it's a true end-to-end test. Like you use the product from the very tippity top and you only have the very bottom of the output. You have nothing else you look at. But often I don't like that's really hard to test because I'll write a function that I know is very difficult to get right. And I just want to test those five things. So I'm going to make a test that's highly coupled to that piece. And if you decide to refactor it, yeah, the tests all break. Like that's just a part of it. I wrote it so that this one thing works this one way. And I wrote a test that runs that one thing to make sure you didn't screw it up if you had to make a minor bug fix to it. I don't try to do that whole I just really think this whole idea of unit testing and, oh, it will prevent you from having headaches while refactoring has just been a lie from the beginning. And then what you'll hear is people do the exact same thing every time. Oh, that's because you're testing at the wrong level. It's just like I'm just testing the things that I want to test. I don't test all the things. And what happens if you're testing on the wrong level just simply means that you broke a whole bunch of tests, but then some of your tests didn't, and that gave you the confidence that you did the right thing. And I just don't I just am not going to test the universe. I'm going to have a few end-to-end. I'm going to have the hard parts, and that's that. No more.
I also think, like, I mean, when I'm thinking back to times when I've done testing, like, a lot of times when I will break out testing, it's for things that I know aren't really all that refactorable or changeable anyway. It's like, oh, okay, I made this memory allocator, and we pretty much know what it does, right? You have these like two ways you can allocate memory from it, and you have one way to free or something like that. And then I just have these tests to make sure that, you know, it doesn't end up in bad states or whatever it is. And that's a really useful thing, right? I've definitely done that. I do that for math libraries. Like, we kind of all know what the sign of something should return. So if I'm making a math library that implements the sign function, that's not, like, I don't have to think too hard about refactoring sign, because math has been around for, like, you know, hundreds of years and isn't going to change tomorrow. Like, hell, bad news, guys. Like, React updated, and now the mathematical definition of sine is different today.
So I'm so happy that's not even a possibility that React does stuff with math, because we'd be screwed.
You never know, guys. There's still time. There's still time.
Yeah. So I do like them for that. And actually, like, there was I can think of a specific time when I was shipping game libraries when we had a really bad bug that caused a problem for one particular customer that took forever to find. And it was because it was in a thing that I had added to the library just for that customer as like a backdoor, right? They like, we need this one thing really quick. And I was like, okay. And I put it in there, and it had a bug in it. And of course it wasn't in any of my standard testing or anything. It wasn't even really in anyone's use case. Right. And, and so, like, you know, that was to me, I was like, okay, that's pretty good evidence that, like, the testing that I was doing before was good and, like, wasn't a waste of time, because, like, the one time it didn't happen, it caused a significant problem, right? And so, you know, presumably I would have had more of those in actual other customers had all the stuff that normally ships to the library not been tested in the way that I thought it should have been. And, you know, from then I was always thought, like, you know, don't never do a one-off add. Like, if I'm going to add something for a customer, I'll add it, like, the right way and actually put in the testing for it, or I'll just tell them, I'm sorry, I can't do that right now because, you know, I'm too busy or whatever. And so I do think, like, yeah, when you can actually talk about, this is isolated, this is what this thing does, I'm pretty sure it's not going to change, I think the tests are great. But before then, yeah, it's just, and also, this was just kind of going off on a random anecdote, but just to circle back, the thing that Prime was saying is absolutely true. It's like refactor testing, not really. Like, that's only, you can only really get like a very high level confidence from that. You can't really know. There could be all sorts of things that aren't really working, because whole system testing like that is going to miss, it's going to miss like weird edge cases that can overlap. And the only way you catch those with test-driven development is knowing about those edge cases and making tests to kind of target them. And you can't do that if you just refactored everything, because now the edge cases are different, right? So yeah, I think TDD people overstate the degree to which that really works.
That's why I'm a huge fan of PDD, prod-driven development. I think that every time you release and you have a bunch of people that use your product, you should do a slow release. You should measure the outcome, because it's just going to test all the weird things you're never going to be able to think of or set up. And if it starts breaking, you know that you screwed up. Previous version worked better than the new version. You can't release this new version. You got to back it up. Not P. Diddy, PDD. Okay, stop saying P. There's no baby oil in this situation. Okay, but I mean, to me, it's
shots
like,
fired at Sonos or Sonos or whatever that company is called.
I don't know what I don't know what they did.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
You guys are supposed to be the web dev people. What's going on?
What the hell are you talking about, Casey?
Sonos, the company that makes the speakers. Nobody?
Bose? I know Bose.
Are you kidding me?
You guys are the web dev guys. You
know this is Beats by Dre?
No, this is like legendary. Like, everyone knew about this. So there's this company called Sonos. They make like the most popular internet powered speakers in the world. Like, everyone has these things. I mean, not me, because there's no way in hell I'm connecting speakers to the internet. That's just a way to make them not work, which Sonos went ahead and demonstrated for me. They had a product that everyone liked. They were an extremely popular speaker. They then did a big software update where, like, they were like, we're rolling out our new system. Like, you know, kind of like how Google does every couple of years. They're like, hey, guess what? Gmail's going to suck way harder than before today. Like, you have five, you know, you'll get 5 months of being able to switch between them, and then you're on to the new bad one. They did that, only there was no 5 months. They just basically said, like, here's the new rollout. And it was awful. Like, tons of feature regressions. It didn't really work. Customers couldn't do most of the things they used to. And it, like, tanked the company. Like, it was just, like, immediately everyone hated it and nobody wanted to buy their stuff. And they had to do this walk back. And they couldn't roll back because they had redeployed all their servers. And I guess they didn't know how to, like, undeploy them. So they couldn't – you couldn't go back to the old app. It was – go read about this. I can't believe no one knows about this but me. It was a massive
Casey,
failure.
I know it.
Never heard of them.
I heard it.
Okay.
Casey,
thank
I don't know if you guys can hear me, but I heard
you.
That. Okay.
We can hear you. We can hear you, TJ. We can't really see you. You have very few expressions.
That's fine.
But
that's
fine. Okay. Your point is that hardware is definitely different than software. You know,
this
if Twitter
software,
has a
yeah.
small breaking thing because they made something – Twitter, all these major sites, they break all the time, right? I have much more forgiveness for that. This is, you know, it's that's obviously different than, you know, you got to play the field a little bit different when I say break production. If I'm building a game that only, you know, so many people play, you don't want it just crashing nonstop while you're testing features. There's probably some levels. But if you're Twitter and all of a sudden you can't post for 5 minutes and only 0.001% of the people couldn't post for 5 minutes, it's just not going to make a huge splash and it's probably not going to deter them from actually using the product again.
Well, I was actually – no, I was agreeing with you with the Sonos thing. What I was saying was they should have done exactly what you're talking about. They should have taken and deployed a small server bank
yeah.
for what they were doing.
Oh, I see.
Given it to 1% of their users, and their users would have been like, this is utter garbage, and I do not want it. And they would have been like, okay, pull that on back. Nobody saw it. We're fine, right? So exactly what you're saying,
oh,
I
okay.
was totally agreeing with you. I'm like, Sonos, if they had done that, they would have totally saved their company literally like 6 months of hell. Had they just given a slice of users this thing for a while, they would have been, you know, some significant percentage above beta test, right? Like, so, like you said, you know, 5-10% of the people got this. They would all been like, nope, 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 nope. And then they would have, like, you know, been like, okay, okay. So that's all.
I do want to, can I say one thing just about the testing part, though? Is that okay? From before?
Maybe.
Sure. That's what the podcast is about. Exactly.
Yeah, cool. I like this. I like
sure.
this. Go for it, TJ.
My favorite project that I've ever worked on, NeoVim, by the way.
Can you go back to the grass? You were much more, like, better in the grass.
Really?
Your
okay.
house is
my phone,
blocking
I got a,
the towers.
I got a notification that said, your phone is overheating because I was in the sunshine.
I was actually going to bring that up in the beginning.
Like, it literally
right,
said,
well,
your phone is
make
overheating.
Sure your body's the one covering. Okay. All right. Sit over. Create a shadow,
here,
TJ,
I'm,
so they
I'm
can't.
In, you guys are
so
in
the
shadows
can't get
now.
Your phone.
You got to
hey,
plank over your phone.
Hey, what's up, boys? Hey, yo, what's up, boys?
This is like getting into like TJ profile pic territory, where it's like on the dating app. Can you tell us some of your pet peeves, TJ? Do you
probably
like long walks on the beach?
I'm a long walks enjoyer. I'm really not a fan of short conversations.
Okay.
I want to really find out about the real you. I don't know what else. I don't even know if any of my
TJ
words are coming
did.
Through.
TJ's actually just describing himself right now. That's all TJ's doing.
I love laughing. I love having fun. I like to make you laugh. This is just me to prime. This is my pitch for getting on the yeah. podcast.
It's true. I'll make fun of trash.
Yo, if there's a guy named Trash on the podcast, I will make sure to make fun of him every episode. He uses one password. Are you joking?
All right. TJ, what's your take?
My take is my favorite project that I've worked on, and like definitely the one with the most weird edge cases and probably users, NeoVim. Like, the test suite for NeoVim is amazing. We have tons of we have different like styles of tests. We have different ways to run them. We have all this different stuff. Tons of work went into making it. And maybe that's just partially because NeoVim is like trying to maintain compatibility with Vim on some stuff like literally forever, right? So there's some other requirements that are different. But man, every time I did a PR and a random test broke, it was my fault. It was not the other test. It was not the snapshot tests. It was nothing else. Like, and like random stuff. I mean, maybe it's just because NeoVim's also like a really old C project. So you like change something and then a random global is destroyed. Or I don't know. You know, it's like whatever. It's maybe not always the best. But like,
So I don't, in my experience where people like actually cared about it and like cared to maintain snapshots and make those happen, like no one's even getting paid to work on NeoVim. You know what I'm saying? And like the snapshots were valuable. The unit tests are valuable. The functional tests were valuable. And I used them in a ton of different PRs and across like really large refactors, adding Lua to auto commands, like doing lots of different stuff where I had to change tons and tons of the code. I was just wrong every time until the test went green.
I think that probably goes to show that tests are as valuable as the people who wrote them.
I was literally going to say that.
Yeah, that's what I've been waiting to say, too, is I just wanted to say, but since I've been lagging, I didn't want to yell. I just wanted to yell skill issue to everything Trash has been saying.
I would disagree, actually. I will defend Trash.
Yes!
Okay.
Actually.
Casey's smarter than you.
Because here's the thing.
That's true, dang it!
I suspect that some of what you're seeing, though, is not so much the skill of the people who did it, although they may have been very skilled. It's more just about when the tests were added. So at least for me,
yes,
a lot of times what I'll do is I'll go, okay, let's say I have a bug that I actually work on for a day. Like this is, because most bugs are like, oh yeah, I know what it is, and you just fix it, right? But you get one and you're just like, what the hell is happening? And you actually, it's like that once every few months where you're just like, okay, this is really weird and I'm not sure what it is. When I find those, I typically try to add a test or assertions or whatever I think would have caught it, right? Because I'm like, okay, this one's nasty and I wasn't expecting it. What can I add that will trip this kind of thing up? And I'll add it. And I suspect that much of what gets seen in like mature products like NeoVim are just like, hey, if you've got some post-test discipline, like after we made the product, when we're finding bugs, we add the test that would have caught the bugs. Those are often very good because they come out of what are the things that are likely to break when we do stuff and we put in a net there to catch them. And so those are like very good and they're the opposite of TDD. They're like, oh, they're TDD. They're test-driven debugging. Maybe you could say, or something like that. So I do think there's something to that, that's a lot more. I had a couple other hot takes that I'll get to in a second, but I just wanted to leave it. I wanted to say that one based on what TJ said. I don't know if that's true about NeoVim, but I might suspect it, right?
It definitely is. The thing, though, that like I was more pushing back on is like, I find the snapshot tests in NeoVim invaluable. They're amazing. Yeah. I find a bunch of these good end-to-end tests, truly end-to-end, like literally it runs a test and does user, I don't know if I just dropped, it does like user input and then asserts the outputs, right? Like, though I found those super valuable in NeoVim. Probably just dropped.
Yeah.
I also, no, you didn't drop. We heard your point. I think also to put on top of it is think about the horizon of NeoVim versus you starting up a new dev tool at work. And maybe there's something to be said about when are the goldens introduced during exploration phase, or like NeoVim's just not going to be changing. My assumption is that a lot of NeoVim doesn't change super hard. It's not like, hey guys, let's do a whole new data model today.
Wrong.
Changes
that's
all the time.
That's all the ones that everything you guys have poo-pooed on that I found them the most valuable. When I changed literally the entire data model and how all auto commands work all inside of NeoVim, it was the most useful to have the snapshot tests then.
I mean, your testing is going to depend greatly on what you're building, 100%.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Sure. But I'm just saying, like, we were fundamentally changing the data
Trash.
Models.
Yeah, that's all.
Yeah, I'm just saying. That's what happened. Yeah.
I thought it was a pretty smart statement. Come on!
You're really smart, Trash.
No, I wouldn't poo-poo that at all. You've noticed I have not poo-pooed snapshot testing.
True. Good job, Casey. Again, I love you. You're smarter than Trash.
I love that I'm not going to get dunked on it.
Can we start rearranging the windows based on who Teej thinks is smartest at any given time? And I'm guessing that it has a very high correlation to who is agreeing with him. It seems like I'm getting that sense.
No, I'll just always put Trash at the end. It's fine, Casey. You don't have to worry.
Today I'm going to tweet that Casey protected me from Teej.
Yes.
And this is a pinnacle moment of my career.
I can't even see your guys' videos, so I have no idea what's happening. I'm talking to a black screen right now.
Yeah.
Dude, I've been just cracking up at your feed this whole time. I just can't handle it.
It's pretty good. It's very good. Like, the result is top-notch of the feed.
Unfortunately, I think this will be a stream-only feature. I don't know if TJ will actually have this effect on the video because Riverside will be uploading it.
That's true. He'll still be in weird, like, in his dating site profile pic phase, but it will be much smoother, So anyway, I wanted to add, I would agree that snapshot testing can be good. It just depends on whether those snapshots are going to be stable. I mean, that's the bottom line. If you have, I would imagine what Prime and Trash were talking about is if you're trying to do snapshot testing at a level below something that's actually consistent across the refactor, obviously that's not going to work, right? And so if your snapshot testing is, like someone mentioned, a parse tree, well, if it's a parse of something that could be parsed different ways depending on how you chose to implement that subsystem, those snapshots are useless. If the parse always has to be the same because it's like parsing for the C language specification and it can't change because, like, you know, it's hard-coded, so if the thing's in C99 mode, then it had better produce the exact parse tree, that's a great snapshot test, right? And so I think the difference boils down to those things. It has to be about something that actually is, not going to change. Idempotent to the release of the project. Otherwise, it's a limited time test. But, you know, that's just how it is. So
probably also the scope of the breaking, right? If only 10% of your golden is invalid because you made this change, that's a lot different than 100% of your goldens are invalid and you have to, like, rework all of them because of big kind of refactors. That was my last experiences that I had to do a bunch of testing against this games reporting thing at Netflix, and to be able to do this autodoc and to be able to do it, I had to, like, create the data model of the incoming events, and then they are changing the incoming events like once a week because it was still an exploration phase. So it's just like, well, not only is my input incorrect, now my output's incorrect. So I have to, like, change both sides. So I'm just like, I guess I'm just redoing all the things again. Here we go.
Yep.
And so then it just became super hard to know if I was actually right or if I was breaking things.
So I think at the outset I made it pretty clear I don't like test-driven development as an idea. I don't like focusing the developer's attention on tests. I think they should understand tests and know how to deploy them smartly. But I don't think – you're right. I do want to say there is a place where I do recommend literal test-driven development. And it is as follows. That is, if the programmer is finding that they are low productivity on a particular task, and that task does not provide feedback. So, for example, if you have to implement some low-level feature component that has no visual output, no auditory output, no anything, it's just like an abstract thing that happens inside the computer, right? Then sometimes programmers, like, they get bored working on these sorts of things. But a lot of programmers will, like, focus on things like numbers that come out of a thing. Like, if you run a thing and the number, like, you know, 37% pops out, suddenly the programmer's, like, super motivated to get it up to, like, 45% and 50% right? So sometimes it's like, oh, okay, if you can turn this problem, if you can make a test that turns whatever you're working on into something with a concrete output that you feel some reward about when it goes up or improves, that can be a valuable use of test-driven development. And we do this in performance a lot. We'll make a little test around something that outputs things like how many cache misses did it have, or how many, you know, cycles did it take to complete, or whatever. And it's like, ooh, now I'm, like, trying to get that number down. And that's a lot more fun than I'm just trying to make the system faster or whatever. So, like, a lot of times you can make it so that those things go together, and then you get the test or the good statistics gathering or whatever it is that you actually wanted anyway, and you get this motivation for the programmer, and they all kind of work together in this nice way. So I just wanted to put that out there as one place where I think it does kind of work to drive development by a test of some kind.
First thing that comes to my mind is, like, code coverage reports. And you see that number really low, and I have the opposite reaction where I just don't care and I want to quit. I don't think I've ever saw, like, a low code coverage report, and I was like, you know what? Today we're making that number higher. I'm kind of just like, guys, we suck, and I'm not going to help us get better. There's no way.
No. All right.
I mean, to be fair, if I go to a place that's like 100% code coverage, I also go, uh-oh. right? Oh. Like, I'm also kind of worried about the 100% code coverage cases as well.
I'm not going to say the company I was at. I've been at many.
Netflix.
And there was a team that required 100% test coverage to the point where people were just, like, writing the most worthless tests just to get, like, this, like, PR bot to just shut up. And it was... And to make it even, like, funnier, there's, like, bugs every day, like, in production. So I was just like, what's happening here? I don't know if anyone's ever experienced, like, 100%, like, test coverage quota by their team.
Yes, I did with Falcor when I was at Netflix. 100% code coverage, bugs every day of my life.
Oh, for Falcor, the one line production takedown?
Wait, did you say Falcor?
Uh-huh.
Like the luck dragon from the Neverending Story?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
What? Why was it called that?
You don't know what Falcor
because
is,
because it was named after
I do know what Falcor
dragon.
Is. It's the luck dragon from the Neverending Story.
Yes, it was named after Falcor. The luck dragon from the Neverending Story.
Tell the story, Prime. Tell the story. Tell it all so Casey can hear it, and then we'll be done.
I'll do a quick one. Casey, so how it works is that you would provide effectively an array with keys in it as the path into your data model in the back end. So say you want videos, some ID, title. It would return to you the title in that kind of as a tree, videos, or as a graph, or maybe as a forest is a better way to say it. Videos, ID, title. So if you wanted, say, a list, I want list 0 through 10, title, it would go list 0 through 10, which would be IDs, which would then link to videos by ID title. So it's kind of like a graph-like data structure that makes it so that if you make duplicate requests, it's able to go, oh, okay, I already have videos, whatever. I already have list item 0. I can kind of not request so much from the back end. The problem was is that what happened if list 7 doesn't exist? You don't know. So we have to return something back to you that says it does not exist. So we return something called like it's a boxed value. It's an atom of undefined. It lets you know, hey, there is a value there, and the value there is nothing. You don't need to request it again. It's not going to be something. So we created something called materialize. On the back end, that means you need to materialize missing values. Well, what happens if you request list 0 through 10,000, 0 through 10,000, 0 through 10,000, title? Well, you just created a gigantic number that we're going to materialize everything for you. And so with one simple line of code, a while loop in Bash, you can DOS, or at one point, 2016, you could have DOSed down and took down Netflix permanently. There was no rolling back. It was in production for like 2 years. You could do it for all endpoints, for all devices, for everything, and just it would never run again. And that's it. It was a simple while loop, and I wrote a lot of beautiful code about it, and I did a lot of beautiful stuff with it, and it was very nice code, and then I also discovered it and reported it, and then later on it got named the Repulsive Grizzly Attack.
Repulsive Grizzly?
Yeah.
So has no one at Netflix watched The NeverEnding Story? Shouldn't it be called The Gamork or something? Like, it's a movie. It's probably on Netflix.
Okay, this wasn't some 9,000. It was a completely separate team that when they found out about it, they had to do a bunch of work. And it ended up being, you know, a fix on the Zool gateway and all this kind of stuff.
All right. Because there are no grizzly bears in The NeverEnding Story. I didn't read the original book because I think it's in German or something. I don't know. But.
Yeah, but the nice news is I originally didn't come up with the materialize idea, but I did do a lot of refactoring that while refactoring and recreating everything, I stopped and went, wait a second. Something seems funny here. So then I trashed staging for a day where no one could use staging for a day, and then that's when I realized we made a mistake.
When I say sorry, we, okay. I mean me.
Yeah.
And that's it, and he's off.
He's like,
I told my story, and I'm not participating in this podcast anymore. Yeah.
The transitions at the end of this podcast are just getting worse and worse. Yeah. We just end stream. He walks off frame.
Stream.
What's happening?
All right, stream done. Do anything you want to add to this? All
he's
is stream done.
Smile.
Are we still live?
Yeah,
we're still live.
TJ's dude. Find a friend that smiles at you like TJ smiles at us. I think today's big takeaway is don't bring Trash Dev into a project that needs help. He'll just quit.
Yeah. No, actually, I will help your product get better.
Bye.
Okay? He will drive your code coverage metrics down to 0.
Yeah.
Code coverage is a lie anyways.
Are we live?
And then quit. Oh, TJ's back again. All right. Well.
What is happening?
Don't know.
See you later. No blockers on my end.
I think we had a really productive meeting today, everyone.
Yeah.
Everybody enjoy your weekend.
Next quarter is going to be big.
It's going to be the biggest quarter of our lifetime.
Absolutely.
We've got to hit our OKRs.
Yep.
Well, okay then. Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, another professional podcast from the stand-up.
All right, and ending it. All right, hold on 1 second. I'm gonna end the stream. Hey, thanks everybody for being around here. TJ is back. Big whatever TJ is.